next case is 99-1156, Cincinnati Bar Association versus Chuck Ray Stidham. Mr. Haefeli, I think you're going to go first.
I wasn't sure. I'll belabor it more. I have not been in this situation before. I believe there are one or two files that have not been delivered that the attempts have been made. And one of the two is represented by counsel who I suspect is involved in.
What he has with him and you have with you today, in your professional judgment, does that comply with the order?
I think it does, but I don't know what files he has. He's gone through his files. I've seen the boxes. It's a stack of things. But, you know, I think it complies with the order to the best of his ability. Now, it may be there's a file somewhere that some client in the year will say, hey, I like that file.
I just want to know if you think that he's substantially complied. Is your professional word to us that he has? Because thereby you're seeking a vacation of the contempt, aren't you?
I think he's substantially complied. I'm not saying there are not loose ends. We think we've got them covered. And some of the affidavits that the bar filed with their response are basically against the Peter speech. There are people that say he owes you money. I don't owe you money. Especially referring to funds. The check was sent out just this Monday on one of those cases. In fact, one of the affidavits. Another client owes him $40,000. So there we go. There's still another. She said, I paid $3,000. I want it back. But she owed him $5,000 from a prior case. And see, so we get in. I don't want to get into
the order of the court says when a lawyer is suspended, they return the files to the client. It doesn't say they negotiate their fee over the files, does it?
No. I didn't mean to imply that. I'm just that when a client says, hey, I paid you $3,000, and the agreement was you got to pay something on the arrears now to represent you on this. The client says, no, you didn't. I don't think that's contemplated in this. In this procedure here, he gives the file. Otherwise, the client could use this procedure to basically get money. But I think that is a matter that may have to be litigated, but I don't think it's part of the
procedure. I thought you were suggesting one reason he hadn't given up some of the files is because he was negotiating with clients over his fee. They owed him some money, so he was keeping the file.
Even the person I was referring to got the file.
Okay.
That wasn't
good. Okay, I misunderstood.
No, right.
The affidavit, some of these affidavits are quite, you know, April and March. Do we know? Still complaining about not having their files back. Calling him, no return calls from him. Do we know that the affidavit he's submitting, which should be filed in the clerk's office, by the way, afterwards.
We have it based on the bar's threat that maybe file agreements. If we file it, we wanted to come in here first and hopefully get
I don't quite understand that, frankly, why there'd be agreements to file an affidavit, but we'll let the bar tell us that. So do you know whether the affidavit that's being filed clears up the six affidavits that are filed by the related?
It does to my satisfaction because two of them, the files were located. It was mailed to them on Monday, July the 3rd. Another one was picked up by the boyfriend, and that's the one over the $3,000 dispute. He is also one of the complainants. He's got about five of his six files, and an arrangement was made with his counsel to pick up the six that are the worst. The Burns case filed with him, their attorney, Mr. Walsh, and my guess is the and the Barnum case is strictly a fee dispute. There's none of the files being returned. And Parker has filed a return. So I think
if the order from this court said return all the files within 30 days of January 5th of this year. So we're in July, and there's some clients who are saying that they haven't, you know, you're saying, well, we're going to get the boyfriend to pick it up July?
And two of them, as I said, two of the six here were mailed on Monday, this last
Yeah, I mean, so isn't there contempt just as a, I mean, isn't that contemptuous?
Well, I think what he's been doing is contempting the perjury.
I guess what bothers me, frankly, is that it required ordering him in here today before he finally, apparently, decided to comply with our order. So he's complied as of today, but there's a lot of clients here who, one client supposedly lost their house. I read that, I don't know if it's true, but that's one of the allegations, or that they lost their house.
I think that happened before. I don't know.
Maybe that's part of the underlying one. I couldn't tell, but... you know, he waited and waited and waited until the court finally said, okay, you come in here and tell us why, you know, purge the contempt if you can. He's already in contempt, so why the delay, I guess? I'd like to know why there's all this delay. As Justice Cook said, 30 days from the order of January, you know, it's 30 days, it's not April, and it's not July.
The vast majority, I think, was done within that time, and part of it, again, I will say this, I know I speak for Mr. Sitter, that we've taken this court's decision very just, very fair, and very compassionate, no argument with it in any respect. But the problem did not go away. While we were pleased with the result, the fact that he had been suspended, the press made much of it.
Easy on it, I could make it go away. Easy on it, I could make it go away. He says it hasn't gone away. He needs to go away.
People were calling down there. How did we get any involved with Mr. Stidman? They just wanted to put, they knew what life was in, they wanted to put us in. And Mr. Patterson, I've been trying to work this out, but there have been clients that we didn't get files. He closed his office. He had to be practiced in part of the state. It took a long time to go through the fee. And we brought the concern for the
The original decision by this court, which you characterize as very fair and very sympathetic to the problem, we stayed 1 year of the suspension on the condition that the respondent meet the requirements of monitoring and counseling, et cetera. But the failure to comply timely with this and require be found in contempt, et cetera, you know, may well be, I don't know if the bars move for that, but may well be a basis for our imposing that second year.
Well, that's basically what the problem is.
That's what she's done.
I do think it's something to keep the court where to consider at the top of one of the years is obvious. Mr. Citizen, this morning, he does not intend to reapply or ask for anything to act even if the years up until he and his doctor is ready.
Well, that's an application for reinstatement is a different matter than than imposing that second year right now.
I don't think, again, to answer you, Mike, the Chief Justice's question, if there was justice, that was, I think, he's substantially complied.
But late.
Within the limits of the ability of the affliction he has. Again, most of it was done very quickly. There have been some straggler cases, and some of his clients, I'll be honest with you, are very difficult people to deal with in the best of sense. He's done his best, and again, the six affidavits, I think we've taken care of this, although there is one file that has been turned over to the attorney, but there has been a correspondence with the attorney, and that's one of four or five files. The man got his girlfriend's file like a week later in January. He said, take this, again, he got a free puppy in the back, Mr. Sitter. If you want your other file, then I'll take care of it later, or whatever. Then he gets another lawyer, and she gets some of those cases, and on a different case, he gets a new one. That file pays for that. So it's not all been on Mr. Stibbs. It's a result of any lethargy or even depression. I suppose the best solution would be just get a FedEx or somebody to go around with a truck and drop them off and get signatures on their leases. But he did have personal relationships with these people. Again, those went out.
Maybe we hear from the Bar Association, then you might want to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Haefeli. Ms. Colton.
Bar Association.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to address you this morning. Bar Association has only two brief points that I'd like to make. First of all, the whole reason that we're here today is because the respondent has been unable to comply with the court's order of January 5th. He wasn't able to file his affidavit of compliance within 30 days. He wasn't able to do it within 60 days. He wasn't able to do it within 90 days, leading this court on its own to issue the show cause order and the subsequent contempt order that brings us here today. It appears that the respondent really cannot comply with the January 5th order because time matters not for me to do that. Some reference has been made to the affidavit that were filed along with the related response to the show cause order, indicating that at least with respect to those six former clients of the respondent, none of them have been verified by a certified mail of the respondent's suspension. And indicating that or at least five out of those six requests have been made for return of property or unknown funds, and no response has been received. We asked the respondent to provide us with some explanation about these matters, but we received nothing. The first that I've heard about these matters being resolved is what I've just heard right now from Mr. Hagan. Those affidavits that were attached to our reply really were just a representative sampling of the calls that have been coming into the Bar Association. There were many more. If the respondent received permission today to file his affidavit of compliance 5 months late, he is not in a position to assert that he is timely complied with the requirements of the court's order. And that is in part the basis of the Bar Association's position that he's not in a position at this point.
So if he files the affidavit that we've ordered filed, he violates the order, and if he doesn't file it, he violates the order.
He violates the order in not having complied in time.
So there's no way he can comply.
Right.
So we found him in contempt. What else do you want us to do with him?
Your Honor, what the Bar Association is asking for at this point, in light of his noncompliance, is that you reevaluate the sanction that has been imposed.
Oh, that's where you're going with it. You want the other year added to it.
At least.
But then he'd still have to file his affidavit, wouldn't he?
Yes.
But then he'd still be in contempt, because you're saying that's an additional grievance.
I suppose we'd have to look at what the problem was and look back at those affidavits to make our own efforts to contact those former clients and see if we can satisfy ourselves that all requirements have
been met. Well, wouldn't the effect of this be that our sanction for his contempt, for his contemptuous action to the court, would be that he doesn't get the grace that we granted him, the 1 year essentially probation, that we take him out for that year also? That's what you're asking, for his contemptuous action, that he needs to be removed.
It goes beyond that, though, Your Honor.
By the way,
in this court's decision, in arriving at the sanction, it seemed to place great emphasis on the respondent's depression as a mitigating factor. And it noted the evidence that was presented to the court that Mr. Stidham's depression was improving and that it's true. What's noteworthy here is what hasn't happened in the last 6 months. And he appears to have been unable to comply with even the preliminary requirements of the suspension order, by means of which he was to report back to the court in 30 days as to the status of his compliance with all the various steps that he was to take. And it also appears that he has not been able to take all the steps that he should have taken to make sure that his former clients were not impaired in their ability to move their cases forward in a timely manner.
You seem to indicate that he is purposely defiant of the order.
No, Your Honor, that's not my intention. I don't dispute that he suffers from an illness, but unfortunately and sadly, it appears that his ability to function is still impaired in a very significant way. And for that reason, our association is asking this court to revisit the issue of what is the appropriate sanction.
You want the additional year put on?
Yes, Your Honor, at the least.
You say at the least.
Well,
tell us about the at the least.
Although this court adopted the findings of fact and conclusions of law, the board did not adopt the board's recommendation of an indefinite suspension as the appropriate sanction. And the decision to go with the 2 year suspension with 1 year stay seem to be focused on depression as a mitigating factor. But in the period of time that has passed since that opinion was issued, it's beginning to look as if the depression is a factor really on the other side in looking at what the appropriate sanction is. If it's so severe that it has impaired the respondent's ability to comply with the terms of the suspension order, it sounds as if it's not something that is going to go away fast enough to put the respondent in a position to be able to practice law again, at least in the near future.
So you feel we could reconsider the condition as to be more severe than it was made out to be?
Or at least not to have improved substantially enough to continue with the same sanction.
Thank you, Ms. Colton. Mr. Papley, you've used your time, but 30 seconds.
First of all, I'm not aware of any consent situation where the consent or does not allow her to consent.
Well, doesn't Ms. Coltman raise an important issue for us? We have to determine whether the year of probation is still appropriate in view of the fact that Mr. Stidham seems to have difficulty in his relations with even former clients, doing pretty basic things, informing him. And the affidavits indicate he didn't even inform them that he'd been suspended, which of course is one of the requirements of the court's order, and then the files and property, not returning property. Why should we permit a person who indicates whatever the reason, it's depression, but for clients who are who suffer from a lawyer with this sort of conduct, don't we have a responsibility to say to him, maybe another year out is appropriate, until so we see whether you can practice law again, whether you have the skills and the...
Well, of course, the present posture of the case for this court to do that. And I have a question, does this court have the power to punish an intent in that manner? Certainly the court has the power to punish an intent. The court just says, well, we're going to punish an intent. We're not going to give you goodbye. I'm going to send you to jail. We're not going to put you on probation.
Would you, I think you would, I take it you would argue that before we can remove the probationary period and remove it from the practice, that for that extra year that there needs to be another hearing, another process that determines that. Is that true?
Well, and I think there's probably one of the work based on the rather chilling memo of response to the show cause order, which kind of chilled us. What do we do now? If we file or come in and file a grievance, if we don't file or file a grievance, Justice Douglas, right? I think he should have a chance to prove himself in to file the affidavit today. Any loose ends will be taken care of. To my knowledge, there's only one or two, and those people have been contacted. One guy never picked up the spot.
Thank you, Mr. Haefeli.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We are going to take a brief recess before the admission ceremony.
All right. Okay.